The next morning, Pogue Quentin went to the marshal's office. Marshal Dawson was sitting at his desk playing a hand of solitaire.
I figured you'd be coming in here as soon as you got into town.
What the hell is Billy Ray doing in jail?
Maybe you ain't heard the whole story.
Quentin's foreman, Cole Mathers, found out Billy Ray was in jail. He passed on the news to Quentin that morning at breakfast.
I heard he slapped a whore around a bit. You can't tell me that's the first time that's ever happened to her. Whores get slapped around all the time. It's the nature of their business.
He did more than just slap her around. He broke her nose. There were some folks got pretty upset over it. I figured the best thing to do was put Billy Ray back in jail until you come into town today. Else there might have been even more trouble. You know how he is.
No. How is he?
Come on, Pogue. You know how he is. Billy Ray's got about the quickest temper anyone I ever known. You need to talk to him about that. One of these days, he's gonna get mad at the wrong person.
You let me worry about my boy. He's my problem, not yours.
That ain't entirely right. He's my problem, too, as long as I'm marshal of this town.
Yeah, well, that's another thing, Dawson. You are marshal of this town only as long as I say you are marshal of this town.
I know that, Pogue. I didn't mean nothing by what I was saying.
Find out how much damage was done to the whore.
It cost her $2 to have the doctor look at her. Plus, she ain't gonna be making a lot of money as long as she got a broke nose and two black eyes.
Quentin took out a $20 bill.
Give this to her. This should be enough, don't you think?
Yes, sir. This ought to more than satisfy her.
Now turn Billy Ray loose.
I hope I didn't get you upset none by me putting him in jail.
When I get upset with you, Dawson, you'll know it.
Quentin walked over to the wall and stared at the wanted posters for a moment as he waited for his son to be brought out to him.
What you should be doing is looking out for people like this, instead of wasting your time putting my son in jail.
He leaned over to examine two of the posters more closely.
I'll be damned. No wonder he had enough money to bid against me.
Quentin was looking at a Dodger that had a picture of Jason and Stu Sinclair and a statement saying that each man was worth $500. At that moment, Deputy Wilson brought Quentin's son out.
What the hell, Billy Ray? Can't you stay out of trouble? Where's your horse?
I don't know. Last I seen him, he was tied up in front of the New York saloon.
He's in the stable out behind the jail.
Come on, let's get your horse and get back to the ranch.
It was dark when the train pulled into Big Rock, but Cal stood at the depot to meet them.
Look at him, Cal.
Prince Henry followed the lead down from the private cattle car.
Have you ever seen a more magnificent-looking animal?
No, ma'am, I don't reckon I have.
And here I thought you came down to the depot to meet us. Little did I know you were here just to meet Prince Henry.
Well, I came to meet you two also.
Also?
Well, I don't mean nothing by that. You know what I think of you and Miss Sally.
Oh, for heaven's sake, Smoke, quit teasing him.
Oh, that's all right, Miss Sally. I knew he was just teasing. Say, don't you wish Pearlie was here? He's been after you to buy a champion bull for nearly a year now.
I think he would approve.
Do you think Pearlie will come back?
I'm sure he will.
He's the best friend I ever had.
You loaned him your silver hat band, didn't you?
I sure did.
Well, when a friend borrows something from another friend, don't you think he will bring it back? Especially if you are best friends?
Yes, ma'am, I expect you're right about that. But I don't mind telling you, I sure do miss him.
We all miss him, Cal. He's like a part of the family, like you. You are a part of the family.
Let's get this bull home.
Did you have to pay a lot for him?
Look at the confirmation on that animal. Yes, sir. He's a champion, all right.
How much did you have to pay for him?
Can you imagine the calves we'll get for him? Why, we'll have a fine herd of Herefords in no time at all.
Do you get the hint, Cal? He doesn't want to tell you.
$1,500.
How much?
$1,500, which is exactly twice as much as he intended to spend.
Yes, but I came into a little extra money while I was down there.
Hi.
By now, all were mounted and they were leading Prince Henry toward the ranch. As they rode through the night, Smoke told the story of the break-in at his hotel room.
Them boys had known what room they was breaking into, they would have never done it. Ain't nobody can beat you.
Cal, haven't you ever heard of the old cowboy adage?
No, what's an adage?
A saying.
Well, I don't know, I've heard lots of cowboy sayings.
Well, try this one. There's never been a horse that can't be rode. And there's never been a cowboy that can't be throwed.
I don't get it.
It means you should never think that you can't be beaten.
Oh, you mean there might be someone somewhere who's better with a gun than you?
Maybe.
Let's don't talk about this anymore.
It had been 2 weeks since the attempted holdup of the stagecoach. The last 10 runs had been tiring, but without incident. It was dark when the stage returned from its round-trip run to Hama, and it rolled down the main street with its corner lanterns gleaming.
Oh, I tell you the truth, I'm so tired I don't even plan to eat supper tonight. I'm going to go right to bed as soon as I get home.
The coach passed in front of the cantina. Pearly turned in his seat to look toward him.
What is it? What are you laughing at?
Here I am so tired I'm going to bed without even eating supper, and you can't wait to get to the cantina.
I thought I might drop in for a little while. I'm not ready for bed yet.
That's because you're still a young man. Wait till you're as old as I am.
Ben, I don't mean anything by this, but what's a fella your age doing driving a stagecoach anyway? Couldn't you find something a little easier to do?
You think I'm too old to handle the ribbons, do you, boy?
No, not at all. I didn't mean anything like that. It's just that, well...
Don't get all in a twitter over it. I'm just teasing you. I know you didn't mean anything by it. I know I complain about getting tired, but driving a stage is what I do. I've been driving one for 30 years. Wouldn't know how to do anything else. Wouldn't want to do anything else.
I give you this. You're good at it. Seen a lot of drivers in my life, and you are the best.
Well, thank you, boy. I appreciate that. Here we are, folks.
Pearly climbed down, then opened the door to help the passengers out. After seeing everyone was situated, he went over to the cantina. Under the soft, golden light of three gleaming chandeliers, the atmosphere in the Casa de la Suerte cantina was quite congenial.
Señor Pearly, do you want a tequila?
Yeah, you may as well give me one, Manuel.
I remember when only beer you would drink.
Yeah, well, you've ruined me.
Pearly was standing at the end of the bar nursing a tequila when one of the girls sidled up to him. She had long black hair and was wearing a low-cut red dress that showed a generous amount of cleavage.
¿Tú vas a beber a sola, Señor Pearly?
Come on, Rosita. You know I don't comprehend your lingo that well.
I ask you if you are going to drink alone.
Well, not if I can get a pretty girl like you to drink with me. Manuel, tequila for beautiful Rosita, por favor.
As she waited for the drink, Rosita reached up to remove Pearly's hat. She touched the band, which gleamed brightly in the soft light of the cantina.
Plata.
What?
The hot band, it is silver.
Oh, yeah.
It is beautiful. Where did you get it?
It isn't mine. Belongs to a friend. I borrowed it.
Oh, he must be a very good friend to let you borrow such a beautiful thing.
Yeah, he is a very good friend.
It is a good thing to have buenos amigos.
See, it is very good to have friends.
I am your friend, am I not?
See, you are my friend.
What is your friend's name?
The one who gave me the hat band is Cal, but I have two more very good friends, Smoke and Sally.
Humo? You have a friend who is named Humo? Smoke?
His real name is Kirby, but everyone calls him Smoke.
That is a funny name. Does he smoke mucho?
No, I don't know why everyone calls him Smoke.
And Sally, she is your woman?
No, she's Smoke's wife.
Oh, I am glad she is Smoke's wife. You do not have a wife, no?
No, I don't have a wife.
Oh, you had a wife, but something bad happened, yes?
Yeah, she died.
Oh, I am very sorry, Señor Pearly. I did not wish to cause you sorrow.
That's all right. It's been a while now.
Is that why you are here and not with your friends? Because being with your friends brings too much sadness?
Pearly nodded, but didn't speak.
Señor Pearly, I think maybe you should go to your friends now. I think if you are with your friends, things will be better for you.
Rosita, you are right. I think I'll go home soon.
Vaya con Dios, Señor Pearly.
Because the next day was Saturday, there was no stage run. Pearly was having his lunch at the City Pig Cafe when two men came in. One of the men was C.D. Montgomery, the owner of the stage line. Pearly had no idea who the man with Montgomery was, but the man was wearing a three-piece suit, so Pearly assumed he was a man of some importance.
Ah, there he is.
As the two approached his table, Pearly stood.
Young man, my name is Kyle Abernathy. I'm with the New Mexico Mining Company. A couple of weeks ago, you saved our money shipment, and I want to thank you personally.
Well, I appreciate you coming here to thank me, but I was just doing my job.
Yes, sir, and doing it very well, too, if I may say so.
Abernathy reached into his inside jacket pocket and pulled out an envelope.
This is for you, Pearly. A little expression of our thanks.
Pearly looked inside the envelope and saw several bills.
You didn't have to do that.
It's $250. But if you don't want it, I'll take it back.
No, I wouldn't want to seem ungrateful. I'll keep it.
I'm sorry we interrupted your lunch, but I just wanted to see you to thank you.
Anyone can interrupt my lunch anytime for something like this.
The following Friday, after returning from his run, Pearly saw Montgomery sitting at his desk, working on a ledger book.
Have you changed your mind?
No, sir, I think it's about time I went home. And I'll be honest with you, when Mr. Abernathy gave me that money, made it a lot easier.
I was afraid of that. That's why I almost told Abernathy not to give it to you. I wanted to keep you on. You've been a good man.
I appreciate that. But I think Tony will make you a good employee, and with a wife and baby, he needs the job.
Well, you're right. I already told him to be ready to start on Monday. We're going to miss you around here, Pearly. If you ever get back down this way again, drop in and see us.
Oh, I will.
Pearly had been following a railroad track for the last several miles. Now, as he rounded a curve in the tracks, a town appeared in front of him. He had not come by this route on his way south, so he had no idea what town this might be. But it was not unlike the many other towns he had visited during his prolonged odyssey. It was a scattered array of buildings that were barely distinguishable from the hills and clumps that rose from the prairie floor. As he rode into the town, he took a look at the row of false front buildings that lined the street. Only two of them showed any sign of ever having been painted. The rest were made of raw, rip-sawed lumber that was left to dry and gray as it was weathered by the elements. Pearly had learned long ago that his first impressions could tell him a lot about a town, so he made a thorough perusal of the town as he rode in. He saw a freight wagon backed up to the loading dock at Quentin's Hardware. Two men were busy unloading the wagon, though they weren't talking. Someone was sweeping the front porch of Quentin's Hardware store, and though Pearly looked over toward him and even touched the brim of his silver-banded hat by way of greeting, the sweeper made no acknowledgement of him whatsoever. Pearly hadn't bothered to check the sign that hung on the railroad depot as he came into town, so as he rode down the street, he had no idea where he actually was, though he was fairly certain he was back in Colorado now. Pearly rode by Quentin's General Store, Quentin's Apothecary, Kathleen's Kitchen, which was a restaurant and boarding house, then Quentin's Hotel, until he reached the New York Saloon.
I wonder how this fella Quentin missed buying the saloon.
Over long, solitary rides, Pearly often talked to his horse, doing so in order to hear a human voice, even if it was his own. And in his mind, talking to his horse was more acceptable than talking to himself. Pearly tied his horse off at the hitching rack. Hanging under the porch roof of the saloon was a carved and painted mug of beer. Once inside, Pearly saw a large nude painting behind the bar. Surprised to see such a thing, he stopped to admire it for a moment.
She's quite a looker, isn't she?
Indeed she is.
They say she's the illegitimate daughter of the Tsar of Russia. He won't claim her, so she has to model for nude paintings in order to make a living.
Is that true?
Hell, I don't know if it's true or not, but I'll tell that to all our new customers because it's a good story. What'll it be?
A beer.
Gibson, can we have another beer, please?
Hold your horses, Marilou, till I take care of this fella.
I'm in no hurry. You can serve the young lady first.
He nodded toward her, noticing that her nose was swollen and her eyes black.
What happened to her?
She got beat up by an angry customer.
I hope you've stopped him from coming in here anymore.
I wish I could say that I did. But he still comes in here on a regular basis.
Evan served both the scarred young woman and the young man who was with her, then returned to Pearly.
Now, stranger, you ordered a beer, I believe.
Yes, please.
Coming right up.
Pearly put a nickel on the bar, picked up the mug, then turned his back to the bar to look over the room. He saw a card game in progress. Pearly walked over to the table.
You mind if I join in?
What's your name?
I'm called Pearly.
Pearly? Well, that's not a name you hear every day. But then, I don't have room to talk. My given name is Carol Patterson. And when folks hear it, they think it's a woman's name. But I'm a veterinarian now, so most folks call me Doc. That fella is the newspaper editor. His name is Elmer Brandon. And the young one there is Billy Ray Quentin.
Glad to meet you.
You got any money, Pearly? I don't intend to waste my time with some saddle bum who can't afford to play.
Billy Ray, that's no way to greet a stranger.
This isn't some welcoming cotillion. I asked you if you have any money.
I got enough for a few hands, I suppose.
Extending his leg under the table, Billy Ray kicked a chair out.
All right, you can play till you run out of money. Have a seat.
Thanks.
Don't pay Billy Ray any mind. He just got out of the wrong side of the bed this morning.
Hell, Doc, what makes you think Billy Ray's bed has a right side?
Pearly, Cal, and some of the other hands at Sugarloaf often played poker for matches. It was a game he enjoyed, and it was one at which he had some skill. He spent the first few hands observing the playing habits of the others, folding twice, once sacrificing only his ante, and once losing a little more. He lost the third hand as well, refusing to match a raise. Without asking for permission, Billy Ray reached across the table and turned over Pearly's cards.
You had three fours, and you folded to two pair. I'm glad you decided to join us, mister. It's going to be fun taking what little money you have.
I don't have all that much left, and I didn't want to take too much of a chance.
A fella as scared as you probably ought not to play.
Pearly knew exactly what he was doing. By now, he had not only picked up some of the strategy of the other players, he had also established in the minds of the others that he was a very cautious player. He had also noticed that Billy Ray was not only arrogant, but reckless. It was a character trait that Pearly would be able to use. The cards were dealt again, and this time Pearly drew a pair of kings. He discarded one card, then smiled as he drew his new card, though in fact it was a five of diamonds, which did nothing to improve his hand. Pearly matched the bets. Then, when Billy Ray raised by $5, he watched as the others matched the raise.
You gonna fold again, are you?
No. In fact, I think I'll see your $5 raise and raise it by five more.
Too steep for me.
Brandon matched the raise, but Billy Ray, as Pearly knew he would, raised again.
$10.
I'll see your 10 and raise you 20 more.
I ain't got that much money on me.
Oh, what a shame.
Pearly reached for the pot.
Wait a minute. Do you know who I am?
They told me your name is Billy Ray. Is that not right?
It's Billy Ray, all right. Billy Ray Quentin. I reckon that name means something to you.
No. Tell you the truth, Billy Ray, the name doesn't mean a damn thing to me, should it?
You damn right it should. What's the matter with you? You blind? Didn't you see the name when you come into town? I near about own this town.
Actually, Billy Ray, that would be your pa that owns the town, not you.
It's the same damn thing, and you know it. Now, here's the way it is, mister. I'm going to see your 20 and raise you by $100. You can either match that raise or throw in your cards. What do you think of that?
I think if you're going to be raising me, you need to put money in the pot.
I told you, I ain't got it on me, but I'm good for it.
Mister, I played pokers in saloons and gambling halls all over the West. And everywhere I've ever played, when a fellow's raised, you either call or raise with what money you brought to the table. Now, if you have the money, put it out there. Otherwise, you're going to have to fold.
The hell you say?
Billy Ray, Pearly is right. We've always played that way, and you know it.
You lend me the money, Doc. You know I'm good for.
I don't have that much money on me.
Brandon?
Billy Ray, I've got a pretty good hand here myself. If I had the money, I would have matched his raise. I don't have the money.
All right, take your damn money.
Thank you.
What did you have?
Oh, you know better than that, mister. You didn't pay to see my cards, then I don't have to show them.
I aim to see them damn cards.
Billy reached across the table and flipped over the cards Pearly had laid before him face down.
What? All you had was a pair of kings? Why, you cheating son of a bitch! You ain't about to make a fool out of me!
Billy Ray started for his pistol. The first thing Pearly noticed was how incredibly slow the man was. When he started his draw, Pearly thought he was going to have to kill him. But Billy Ray's draw was so slow and deliberate that Pearly realized he had another, better option. Pearly drew his own pistol, easily beating Billy Ray. Then, wrapping his hand around it, he brought it down hard on Billy Ray's head.
I don't like this. Billy Ray isn't the type to take this. I'm afraid the stranger has let himself in for trouble.
Doc got down on the floor beside Billy Ray and gingerly ran his hand over the lump on Billy Ray's head.
How is he, Doc?
He's all right. He's going to have a headache, but he's all right.
If nobody objects, I think I'll leave before Billy Ray comes to.
I'll join you.
Pearly stepped up to the bar. The bartender was standing at the far end, and he stood there for a moment longer before he moved down.
You might want to leave, too, while you still got the chance.
Why is that?
Billy Ray ain't going to be too pleasant when he comes to.
Well, maybe I can make friends with him, but for now, I'd like another beer, please. I'm afraid my other one got spilled in the ruckus.
I'll get the beer, but, mister, my advice to you is to drink it quick. then ride on out of town.
Thanks. Maybe I'll just do that.
What's your name, mister?
Pearly waited until the beer was put in front of him.
Folks call me Pearly, and you are?
Kelly. Jerry Kelly. I work at the Tumbling Q, and the reason I asked you your name is I was just wondering what name to tell the Undertaker to put on your tombstone is all.
Well, I appreciate your concern, Mr. Kelly, but I don't figure on being any part of your problem. After I finish my beer, I plan to be on my way.
You better drink fast, then. You got any idea who that fella is that you just riled?
Isn't his name Billy Ray?
That's right. Billy Ray Quentin.
Yeah, he said that, too.
Don't that name mean anything to you?
He tried to tell me he was someone important. I know I did see the name a few times as I was riding into town.
A few times? Poe Quentin damn near owns this whole town, plus one of the biggest ranches in the state.
Poe Quentin?
Yeah, that's Billy Ray's paw, and he ain't one to get riled.
Well, Mr. Kelly, I didn't rile Poe Quentin, I riled his son.
At that moment, Billy Ray regained consciousness.
Oh, damn.
He glared at Pearly. Then, after a moment, he walked out without saying another word.
I'll be damned. I never thought I'd see anything like that. Billy Ray's got the worst case of temper of anyone I've ever seen. Maybe he just...
Glancing into the mirror behind the bar, Pearly understood why Mary Lou stopped talking. In the reflection of the mirror, he saw Billy Ray rushing back in through the batwing doors like a mad bull. This time, he had a shotgun in his hands.
You son of a bitch! Nobody does me that way!
A few of the pellets hit Pearly in the cheek, but he still managed to pull his pistol. Enraged that he missed, Billy Ray swung the shotgun toward Pearly.
You son of a bitch! I'm gonna leave your guts on the floor!
Pearly was just getting to his feet when two men wearing badges came into the saloon.
Drop your gun, mister!
Oh, no need for that, Marshal. It's all over now.
You the one that killed him?
I am.
Then it ain't all over, boy. Not by a long shot it ain't over. It's just starting.
Marshal Dawson, Billy Ray is the one who started this. He came in here shooting first. You could see there at the bar he fired the shotgun and took out part of the bar.
Shut up, whore! Shuck out of that gun belt, boy, and let it fall real easy-like to the floor.
Pearly looked around. No one else said anything.
I know Billy Ray had a temper, but he wasn't in the habit of going after someone, especially with a shotgun, unless he had a good reason. Why'd he come after you?
We were playing cards. I won the hand, and he took issue with it.
So you're saying that Billy Ray got mad just because he lost a hand of poker?
That's what I'm saying.
Well, now, I'll admit that Billy Ray had a temper, but I don't think even he would fly off the handle like that just because he lost a hand of poker.
It might have been the way he lost, Marshal.
Oh? And how was that?
This here young fella, Pearly, he said his name was, run a bluff. Only it weren't no ordinary bluff.
You mean he cheated?
No, wasn't nothing like that. But he sort of set Billy Ray up, you might say, playing like he didn't quite know what he was doing. And then when Billy Ray stepped into it, why, Pearly here closed the trap slick as a whistle.
You a card sharp, are you, boy? I don't like card sharps.
I enjoy playing. I am not a card sharp.
Uh-huh. Tell me, boy, how do you make your living?
I'm a cowboy.
Is that a fact? Who do you work for?
Well, I haven't cowboyed the last 6 months.
How you been supporting yourself?
Doing odd jobs here and there. I just came off a job of being a shotgun guard on a stagecoach. I worked there for nearly 3 months.
Doing odd jobs here and there, you say? Where was you a shotgun guard?
Down in New Mexico.
Why are you wandering around so?
No particular reason.
Boy, I get real suspicious of folks that can't stay in one place. I'll just bet that if I go back down to my office, I'll find some wanted dodgers on you.
I'm not a wanted man.
Uh-huh. You ever been in trouble with the law?
I'm not a wanted man.
That ain't what I asked. I asked if you ever been in trouble with the law.
Nothing to speak of.
How much you win tonight?
About $40.
So you killed a man over $40?
No, I killed him because he was trying to kill me. Billy Ray came after me. I didn't have any choice.
Put the shackles on him, Wilson.
Yes, sir, Marshal.
Deputy Wilson took a pair of iron wrist cuffs from his belt.
Put your arms behind your back!
Pearly did as instructed, and the deputy cuffed him.
There. I reckon that'll hold you till we get you down to jail.
Jail? What are you taking me to jail for?
Murder, boy. You shot down Poe Quentin's boy in cold blood. You're gonna stand trial for that, and if Poe Quentin gets his way, well, sir, I reckon you're gonna hang.
The jailhouse was at the far end of the street from the saloon, and as Marshal Dawson marched Pearlie down the street, many followed along so that by the time they reached the jail, there were at least 40 or more townspeople who had fallen in behind them, creating a regular parade.
When you gonna hang him, Marshal?
Just hold off. He's gonna hang all right, but it's all gonna be done fit and proper as soon as we get the judge down here.
Who you gonna get to try him? Won't do now to get someone who's all too highfalutin.
I'll be sending for McCabe.
Yeah, that's it. Send for the hanging judge. Yeah, that'll do real good.
Marshal Dawson pushed Pearlie into the cell and closed the door.
Turn around and back out to the bars and I'll get those shackles off.
Thanks.
Pearlie turned around while the marshal unlocked the chains.
Boy, I don't know what made you come into our town, but you would have been a lot better giving Santa Clara a wide berth.
Santa Clara, is that the name of this town?
You mean to tell me you don't even know where you're at?
I didn't notice the sign when I rode in.
So what you done is you just come into a town you didn't even know just so you could kill one of our leading citizens?
If the fella I killed is one of your leading citizens, your town's in very sorry shape.
Yeah? Well, we'll see what kind of shape we're in when you're dangling from the gallows.
When Letty York stepped into the jail that night, he was carrying a tray covered with a cloth.
What you got there?
I brought the prisoner a supper.
Who told you to do that? The marshal didn't leave me no money to pay for the prisoner's supper.
I paid for it myself.
Why?
Because I saw what happened. And I know this man didn't have any choice. If he hadn't killed Billy Ray would have killed him. Maybe even someone else in the saloon. The way he was using that scattergun.
Damn! If you feel like that, maybe I better just check to make sure you ain't carrying him in no gun or nothing.
Wilson took the cover off, revealing a bowl of beans and a small plate that had two cornbread muffins. He picked up one of the muffins and took a bite.
Hey, put that back. That isn't yours.
I'm the deputy. There's been some hard feelings about this man seeing as he killed Billy Ray Quentin. I need to make sure you wasn't poisoning him or nothing.
Lenny nodded, then walked back to the cell.
I brought you something to eat.
Thanks. I haven't eaten since this morning. I was getting pretty hungry.
Lenny passed the bowl and plate through the bars, then turning the tray on edge, passed it through as well so Pearlie would have something to eat on. Pearlie sat on his bunk, put the tray on his knees to use as a table, and began to eat.
It is very good, or else I'm just very hungry.
No, it is really good. I know because my ma fixed it. She runs Kathleen's Kitchen and Boarding House.
Really? Yeah, I saw that as I rode by while coming into town. I almost stopped there before I went to the saloon. I should have. If I'd done that, I wouldn't be sitting here right now.
You shouldn't be here now anyway. What you did was in self-defense.
Yeah, well, when we have the trial with you, the young lady, and Deckard testifying, I shouldn't have any problem convincing the jury.
Deckard isn't going to testify in court.
Well, why not?
He isn't going to testify because he's too afraid.
Afraid of who? The marshal?
He's afraid of Pogue Quentin. Everybody in town is afraid of him.
Are you scared of him?
He's not a man I would want to cross.
Does that mean you aren't going to testify for me?
No. I'll testify for you. I'm scared of Pogue Quentin, all right, but that doesn't mean I won't testify.
Well, Lenny, I appreciate that. From the way the marshal talks, your testimony may not do much good, but I appreciate that you're willing to do it.
Your cheek looks like it's beginning to swell up some from them shotgun pellets. How come the doc didn't take him out?
I haven't seen a doctor.
That's not right. The marshal should have gotten him to look at you. I'll get him to come by.
If the marshal doesn't ask him to come, I doubt he'll do it.
No, he'll come if I ask him. Dr. Urban is a single man and my ma is a widow. Dr. Urban has been calling on her.
I appreciate that, Lenny. You think you'd get that doctor to come look at me pretty soon?
I'll get him.
Lenny, are you sure you want to get involved in this?
Lenny's mother spoke to him a few minutes later after Lenny told her what had happened.
Doesn't seem like I have any choice, Ma. You have always said I should do what is right, regardless of what anyone else thinks. Well, this is the right thing to do.
I always said you should play the piano in concerts and grand theaters, too. And where do you play? In a saloon.
How many grand theaters are there in Santa Clara?
Well, you don't have to stay here.
I know I don't have to stay here, but I want to. I mean, you are here, aren't you? Besides, I'm not really good enough to play anywhere except a saloon. But I'm not complaining. Playing the piano certainly beats mucking manure out of a stable over at the livery. And that's about the only thing else I would be qualified to do.
I'm not the only one keeping you here, am I?
What do you mean, Ma?
Are you still seeing that, woman over at the saloon?
Only in a matter of speaking. Mary Lou Culpepper is a good woman. But she doesn't want to have anything to do with me.
Well, surely she doesn't think she's better than you.
No, Ma, it's just the opposite. She doesn't think she's good enough for me.
Well, who am I to judge? After your father died, it was quite a struggle keeping food in our mouths and a roof over our heads. If I hadn't managed to make a go of the restaurant and boarding house, who knows what I would have done.
You've done well, Ma. We never went hungry, and you even found enough money to pay for my piano lessons.
You think it is important that you help this man the marshal has in jail, do you?
Yes, ma'am. I do.
All right. I'll go over to David's office now and ask him to step down to the jailhouse to take a look at your friend.
Thanks, Ma.
The letter imprinted on the side of the doctor's medical bag read, David Urban, M.D. He set it on the edge of Deputy Wilson's desk.
What are you doing here?
I've come to look at your prisoner.
Uh-uh. No, you don't. I ain't been authorized to pay you nothing.
Now, I'm not asking for any money, Deputy. All I'm asking is that you let me see your prisoner.
I can't let him out of the cell. You'll have to stay in there with him. And he's a dangerous man, seeing as he's already killed one man.
That's all right. I'll take my chances with him. And I can work as well inside the cell as outside.
I'm gonna have to lock the door behind you.
I understand.
Pearly was lying on the bunk when the three men approached his cell.
Pearly, I brought the doctor.
Good for you. I appreciate that.
Wilson put the key in the cell door, but before he turned it, he looked over at Pearly.
Don't get up off that cot till these folks are inside, and I've locked the door behind them.
Pearly didn't answer, but neither did he make an attempt to get up. Wilson opened the cell door, held it for a moment, then slammed it shut behind Lenny and Dr. Urban.
When you're ready to come out, just let me know.
I'm ready to come out.
You're a real funny man, ain't you?
Let me take a look at your face.
How do they look?
Right now, it's not a face that ladies will fall in love with. But it shouldn't be all that hard to get the pellets out. And they are going to have to come out before they fester up on you.
Dr. Urban searched through his bag until he found something that looked like an extended pair of tweezers.
Lenny, grab that plate that his dinner was on and hold it while I dig these out, will you?
Yes, sir.
Lenny stood by, holding the metal plate, as Dr. Urban dug each of the little balls of shot out of Pearly's face and dropped them on the plate.
Ah!
I'm sorry.
It's all right.
Dr. Urban cleaned the wounds, then poured alcohol on them.
Ow! Oof! Oof!
Sorry, but we've learned a lot in the last few years. And one of the things we've learned is that alcohol helps prevent the wounds from festering.
I know, and I appreciate it.
All right. That does it. Try to keep your hands away from the wounds if you can.
I'll try. Lenny, I'm gonna ask you to do a favor for me. A big favor.
All right, whatever you say.
I want you to go up to the town of Big Rock. When you get there, ask for directions to the Sugarloaf Ranch. At Sugarloaf, you'll find a fellow by the name of Smoke Jensen. Tell him where I am and what kind of fix I'm in. Also, tell him how much money it costs you to go there. He'll pay you back.
Well, I will if I can get off.
If you can get off? Get off what?
You don't know because I wasn't working when you were there, but I play piano for Mr. Gibson.
Gibson?
He's the bartender at the saloon and the owner.
There may not be enough time to wait. From the way the marshal was talking, they're going to try and get this done very fast.
Yeah, you're right. All right, I'll go. It may cost me my job, but I'll go.
It's not going to cost you your job, Lenny. I'm sure you know that Rodney Gibson's a very good friend of mine. I'll make things right with him.
I appreciate that.
Pearly reached over to pick up his hat. The silver band flashed once in the sun.
When you get to the Sugarloaf, give this hat to a young fella there named Calvin Woods. Tell him, thanks for the loan.
Thanks for the loan.
Yeah, he'll know what that means. And it'll prove that you didn't steal it. That you're actually carrying a message from me.
All right, I'll do that.
Don't let me down, Lenny. And hurry, or my friends might get here just in time to visit my grave.
How soon are you leaving?
Lenny spoke to Mary Lou back at the New York saloon.
Pearly is right. If I don't go as soon as I can, it may be too late. And that's why I'm taking the next train north.
Lenny, are you sure you are doing the right thing?
What do you mean?
Poe Quentin is a very powerful man. He may not like it if he thinks you're helping the man who killed his son.
Come on, Mary Lou. You saw it just like I did. You know Pearly didn't have any choice but to shoot Billy Ray.
I know. It was self-defense.
I might not get there and back in time. And even if I do, I don't know that his friends will be able to do anything. But I have to try.
Who are his friends? Did Pearly tell you their names?
Lenny looked at Gibson.
Well, One of them owns a ranch, and Pearly used to work for him. His name is Smoke Jensen.
Did you say Smoke Jensen?
Yes. Why, do you know him?
I can't exactly say that I know him, but I've seen him in action.
Seen him in action? What kind of action?
Well, he's a fellow that single-handed cleaned out the town of Bury, Idaho. I'll tell you this. If there's a man alive who can help this boy, it would be someone like Smoke Jensen.
Well, in that case, I have to get back in time.
Lenny, if you'd like, I'll come down to the depot with you and see you off.
Mary Lou, I can't think of anything I would like more.
Kathleen York also went down to the depot to see her son off. Lenny was the only passenger leaving at this hour, so the waiting room was empty except for the single ticket clerk who sat behind the ticket counter reading the newspaper.
Ma, promise me you'll take food down to him while I'm gone.
Are you saying you don't think the marshal will feed him?
I don't know. You know that Marshal Dawson is Pogue Quentin's man, and if Quentin doesn't want Pearly fed, Dawson will more than likely just starve him.
I'll do what I can, but you know yourself that sometimes I get pretty busy in the restaurant. I might not always be able to get away.
You've got to feed him, Ma.
Well, like I said, I'll do what I can. I'm not going to let him starve.
You'll like Pearly, Ma. He's really a very nice person, and he has been just real friendly to me.
Well, how nice can he be? He killed Billy Ray Quentin.
I told you he didn't have any choice.
Lenny glanced toward the door. He had been glancing toward the door every minute or so since they had arrived half an hour ago.
What are you looking for?
Before he could answer his ma's question, a young woman stepped through the door. She smiled when she saw Lenny, and she started toward him, then stopped when she saw Lenny's mother with him. The smile left her face, to be replaced by a look of concern.
Mary Lou, I'm glad you could come. Come on, I want you to meet my ma.
Now, Lenny, I don't think...
Ma, you watch what you say. I don't think you want to insult the girl I'm going to marry now, do you?
Lenny, you can't be serious.
I am, Ma. She just doesn't know it yet.
Lenny walked over to take Mary Lou by the arm and lead her back to his mother. It was obvious that Mary Lou was nervous, but to Lenny's relief, his mother smiled graciously, then extended her hand.
Mary Lou, I've heard so much about you. I'm glad you are here to help see Lenny off.
The tense expression left Mary Lou's face, and she relaxed visibly.
It is nice to meet you, Mrs. York.
Oh, hey, Ma, I've got an idea. On those times when you can't get off long enough to take a meal over to Pearly, you can let Mary Lou do it for you.
Oh, Lenny, I couldn't ask her to do that.
I don't mind. I'd be glad to do that for you.
Well, thank you. That will be wonderful.
By mid-morning of the next day, a polished black coffin liberally trimmed with silver was on display behind the big window in front of Quentin's hardware store. Throughout the morning, nearly the entire town had stopped by at one time or another to have a look. The top half of the coffin was open, so the body could be seen lying on a bed of white silk. Billy Ray was wearing a black suit, a ruffled white shirt, and a black bow tie. A sign posted alongside the coffin read, "A noble young life brought to an untimely end by a murdering stranger." The article in the Santa Clara Chronicle was more neutral.
Shooting in the New York Saloon. A quiet evening of pleasant conversation, moderate imbibing, and recreational card playing erupted into gunplay Thursday last. Billy Ray Quentin, the son of Hereno County's most affluent citizen, was hurled into eternity by the accurate placement of a .44 caliber ball. Said ball, the result of a pistol discharged by a visitor to Santa Clara, a man who has identified himself only as Pearly. Shortly after the dramatic confrontation, Marshal Clem Dawson and Deputy Deke Wilson arrived on the scene, whereupon Pearly was immediately placed under arrest. Pearly is now awaiting trial for murder. Though the prosecutor may have a difficult time in establishing his case, there are some who were eyewitnesses to the shooting who have made the statement that the stranger had no choice but to return fire. These witnesses report that Billy Ray started the fight by firing a 12-gauge shotgun at Pearly with the obvious intent of killing. It will be up to a jury to make the final decision as to whether Pearly's arrival in our fair town, surely with no aforethought to killing another human being, shall now result in his being hanged. Billy Ray Quentin will be buried tomorrow in the Santa Clara Cemetery.
The funeral parade to the cemetery was led by members of the volunteer fire department, proudly showing off their pumper. Its highly polished brass boiler shining brightly in the afternoon sun. Next came the highly polished white, glass-sided hearse bearing Billy Ray's black and silver coffin. The head of the coffin was somewhat elevated so that the spectators who lined the street on both sides could see the body. The hearse was driven by Josiah Welch, The undertaker, who, like Billy, was dressed in a black suit with a ruffled white shirt and black bow tie. The only differences were that Welch was wearing a high-crowned silk hat and still breathing. Pogue Quentin, who was also wearing a black suit, rode in an elegant open carriage behind the hearse. The carriage, as well as the horses pulling it, was draped in black bunting. As the cortege passed by, the people began following it to the cemetery. But there had been no rites in the church. The body was taken directly from its place of display in the show window of the hardware store to the cemetery. Once the cortege reached its destination, the coffin was removed from the hearse and placed on the ground alongside the open grave. Not until then was the top part of the coffin closed, after which the Reverend Charles Landers stepped up to the head of the grave.
Dear friends, we are gathered here in the sure and certain hope of the resurrection and eternal life of our brother, Billy Ray Quentin. And I ask you to now...
Hold on there, preacher. I want to say a few words.
Very well.
Landers stepped aside, assuming that Quentin would take his place, but Quentin didn't move from where he had been standing.
Folks, the man who murdered my boy, in cold blood, is down there in the jailhouse. We'll be having his trial as soon as Judge McCabe gets here, and that means there will be a jury selected. That jury will come from this town, most of which is here now. If you are selected to be on that jury, I want you to understand that I expect the murderer to be found guilty and to hang.
He held up a copy of the Santa Clara Chronicle and pointed to the front page story.
Brandon, there will be no more stories like this one. Why, if someone didn't know any better, they could read this story and think maybe that the man who killed my son was justified.
Mr. Quentin, you must know that there are some who witnessed the event who say that it was justifiable homicide.
I want you to know, Brandon, that I will be keeping my eye on you and on any more stories you write like this one. And I'm giving you fair warning now not to do it.
Are you threatening the right of the free press, sir?
I'm just telling you, that's all. And for the rest of you, any of you might be on the jury, hear me good. I won't take too kindly to anyone who doesn't do their duty and find that son of a bitch guilty. I am to see to it that my son's killer is hung by the neck until he is dead.
Mr. Quentin, we are having a funeral. Such language is unseemly.
Yeah? Well, you got your language and I got mine, preacher. But I got my piece said now, so you can get on back to the burying.
After a long train ride, Lenny rented a horse from the livery and rode out to the Jensen Ranch. As he dismounted, a young man came storming up to him, an angry look on his face.
Where'd you get that hat?
I got it from Pearly.
What do you mean you got it from Pearly?
Are you Calvin Woods?
Yeah, I'm Cal. How do you know who I am?
Lenny took the hat off and handed it to Cal.
Well, sir, I got the hat from your friend Pearly. He said I was supposed to give this here hat to you and to tell you... thanks for the loan.
That's what he said? Thanks for the loan?
Yes. He said that if I said that, you would know that he gave me the hat to give to you, and I'm supposed to see a man by the name of Smoke Jensen.
What about?
Well, sir, I reckon that's for me to tell Mr. Jensen.
I'm Smoke Jensen. And you are?
My name is Leonard York, Mr. Jensen, but most folks just call me Lenny. Mind if I water the horse? I came up here by train, and I rented the horse in town. I didn't know it was going to be this long of a ride out here, and... I wouldn't want the horse to go down on me before I can get him back to the livery stable.
No, by all means, water your horse. Excuse me for not making the offer. It's just that, well, Pearly's been gone for a while, and when we saw you in his hat and hat band, we were concerned.
Yes, sir.
Lenny led the horse to a large, round watering tank.
Thing is, Mr. Jensen, you got a right to be concerned.
Why? Is Pearly in trouble?
Yes, ma'am, he is. In fact, he's in a great deal of trouble. That is, if you figure getting hung trouble.
Oh, my God! Pearly's been hung?
No, ma'am, not yet. I'm sorry, ma'am. I should have thought before I spoke. I certainly didn't intend to give you that idea. But the truth is, the marshal has Pearly in jail for murder. And they are bringing in a judge that's pretty much known as a hanging judge, so I reckon they'll be getting around to it right soon.
Pearly may have killed someone, but I don't believe for one minute that he will commit murder.
You're right. I don't think any reasonable person could say what Pearly did was murder. I know, because I saw what happened. Pearly had no choice in the matter. If he had not killed Billy Ray, it is for certain that Billy Ray would have killed him. Billy Ray came after Pearly with a double-barrel shotgun with the intention of shooting Pearly in the back.
You say you saw it?
Yes, sir. I saw it all very clearly.
Why didn't you tell the marshal what you saw?
Oh, I did tell him, Mr. Jansen. So did a couple of others who were in the saloon at the time, but the truth is that the marshal works for Pogue Quinton more than he works for the town. And Billy Ray, the man that Pearlie killed, was Pogue Quinton's son.
Pogue Quinton?
Yes, sir. Do you know him?
Smoke, isn't Pogue Quinton the unpleasant man we met in Colorado Springs?
Unpleasant. Yes, ma'am, that would be him. I reckon you do know him, because if you were going to describe Pogue Quinton, well, unpleasant would sure be the way to do it.
You're talking about Pogue Quinton from Moreno County, aren't you?
Yes, sir. Santa Clara, to be exact.
I've never been to Santa Clara.
Well, it's some south of Colorado Springs. It took me 24 hours to come up on the train. I got into Big Rock at 4 o'clock this afternoon.
I appreciate you taking a long trip to tell us.
Yes, sir. Well, I gave Pearlie my word that I would come and tell you, and I'm not one for going back on my word once I give it.
You and Pearlie's good friends, are you?
Not so as you can say. I never even met him until after they took him to jail.
How long had Pearlie been in town when this happened?
That's just it. He hadn't been there any time at all. He said he was coming back home, but he stopped in town long enough to get him a beer and some supper when all this took place.
Smoke, what are we going to do? We can't just leave him there to hang.
We aren't going to. Throw a few things together, Sally, and do it fast. We'll take the train down tonight.
Well, I'm going too.
I wouldn't have it any other way. Lenny, I know you just got here, but are you up to coming back with us?
Yes, sir. Only...
Only what?
Only... I don't have enough money for a ticket back.
Don't worry about that. I'll buy your ticket back.
Smoke pulled out his billfold, then drew out a $20 bill.
And this will pay for your trip up here.
Oh, no, sir. Why, the trip up here didn't cost me no more than $2.
You had to eat, didn't you?
Well, my ma runs a restaurant. It's a good restaurant, too, and she made me a lunch to carry along.
Well, take the $20 anyway.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Well, all right. Thank you, Mr. Jensen.